always say that we are incredibly magical beings living in a magical world, and we were told it doesn't exist. Then we told magic didn't exist. And I've seen it over and over again. It's incredible what we can do.
And I think your journey is a testament to that.
There's a woman in Utah who can see while blindfolded. I'm not speaking metaphorically. She literally puts on a mask, blocks out all light, and reads. She matches colors, she navigates rooms, and she can teach other people to do it, including people who have no physical eyes at all. Her name is Dalia Burgoyne. She's a mother of four, an energy arts practitioner, and someone who has been demonstrating something that most of us would file under impossible at conferences, on morning television, and in research partnerships with people connected to Stanford, Harvard, and the Institute of Noetic Sciences. I've been curious about Dalia and her abilities for a while, and at Contact in the Desert this year, I finally got a chance to sit down and ask her how she does it. Welcome to the show.
Okay, Dalia, before we get into any of this incredible stuff that you discovered about yourself, who were you before you did this?
Well, just about 4 years ago, I was just staying at home with my kids. I have four kids and I had no plans to work or anything until my youngest was five. But when my youngest was about one and a half, I kind of got pulled into this world. Before that, I was very much my entire life into consciousness and into energy work. And I did practice. And it wasn't to do anything in the future. It was just, this is who I am. And so every day I would meditate, I would do energy work. But this is just, the kind of routine I wanted to have. And then I ended up just kind of falling into MindSight. It was more like divine intervention and said, hey, you're supposed to learn MindSight. You're supposed to do MindSight. And I'm just going to say, long story short, I end up discovering MindSight and opening. And at the very same time, my daughter and her telepathy got out there. It was like the telepathy tapes came out. My daughter had already been showing her telepathic abilities for a while by then. And it just kind of all came out at the same time. It was like we were pulled in, and it actually kind of started with Contact in the Desert here. So I remember Hakeem Eisler of the Psy Games. He was just having the idea of the Psy Games. He just had an idea. And I saw that there was going to be a couple really cool speakers that I like there. And so I said to my daughter, I said, hey, you think I should go to the Psy Games? I remember thinking, should I go there, or should we both go there, or should I just not go there? And so I'm specifically asking my daughter to ask her angel team, her spiritual team, what they say. Her spiritual team is extremely accurate. And anyway, she says, the team says, we're going to be there and we're going to be center stage. So she's talking about the Psy Games. I said, the Psy Games? I was thinking of going as a spectator, not as someone on stage. And I said, okay. And then she told me to wait for an invitation. And then a month later, Hakeem reaches out to me directly and says, hey, I need someone to kind of demonstrate MindSight at Contact in the Desert. Have you heard of it? I said, no, I haven't. And all I'm thinking is, how does Hakeem know I do MindSight? We've never really talked, you know? And I said, sure. And so I come to Contact. It's humongous. Like, everyone goes nuts. And even Hakeem, he didn't realize how easy it was for me, or how like instant it was. And I said, why did you even reach out if you didn't know I could do it that well? And Hakeem is just like, it was just divine for him too. He just knew he was supposed to. I don't even know how he connected with me, really. It was like a series of synchronicities that made us connect. But then anyway, after this, then I got that invite that my daughter said. And we definitely were center stage. Like, we, exactly how she described it, it was a huge deal when we were at the Psy Games. So it's kind of a big roundabout way of answering the question.
Yeah, wow, what a journey. And it's almost like a one-year anniversary for you.
It is.
Right? How does that feel to come in as like, oh, I'm not sure if I should be here, and now you're kind of coming and commanding the space, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a totally different vibe last year. I was so, and I mean, I don't want to say I'm not humble now, but I was extremely humble. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? You know, it was just like, I am so overwhelmed. I can't believe anyone's even looking to me for anything. I'm just this housewife, you know? And this year, I'm so comfortable being here. Last year, it was just like, I'm so shy, you know? But now very comfortable doing it.
That's cool. It's like the universe has magnetized you into the skin you always had, but never quite realized.
Yeah, something that I was supposed to always do, but it wasn't, you know, it kind of came at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. So I read that you trained, I'm going to say, in yin style bioenergy system. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah, it's basically cultivating energy every single day. So our body naturally has bioenergy, just all of us. We just naturally kind of run off of it. It's kind of like electricity. And so every day, what I would do is I would cultivate it. So I would just kind of, it's almost like weightlifting, but you're doing it with energy. And when I say it's yin, it's more, so there's some kind of systems where you're kind of doing it with force and you're trying to like kind of show it with force, and it's more in the physical. You're doing telekinesis, and you're doing things with heat. So the yin side is more on the spiritual side. So you're building it, it's extremely gentle. It's actually kind of cool. It's not hot. And when you're on the yin side, it's more spiritually based. So it's more about like going out of body and healing and having out of body experiences, stuff like that.
That sounds really cool. So you're essentially building up like an energy store. Do you think maybe that played into how like potent your abilities are?
I think so, yeah. Because of that system, that another thing I did every day is I would kind of walk around blindfolded, and I would try to perceive my environment without my eyes. And so I would do it with my senses. So I would do it with my sense of sound and my sense of touch and just a sense of energy. So I would kind of perceive that way, but I wasn't actually kind of seeing, except for in the dark, I could kind of see the edges. And so I got good at seeing in the dark. But as far as actually being able to read and see colors and stuff, that I didn't quite understand what was going on there. I knew kids in Indonesia were doing it, and that's all I knew. And for like a decade or so, I remember thinking, you know, eventually I'll get to that. I remember it used to be said that only kids can do it. And in some circles, they still believe that. Like only kids can learn this and do it. But I remember thinking, of course not. No, of course not. I have the same access to the same brave states as those children. So I should be able to do it too. Eventually I'll get to it. So I just knew I would. And then I had this one weird experience. So you don't just kind of train in energy work every day without having side effects that are weird. And so one of the side effects I had that was weird was I would wake up at a different time. And it's not like my thoughts would wake up in a different time. It's like my whole body would wake up and I'd be in a different time. And I know that sounds insane, but and so so it would kind of show me what's going to happen when it would happen. So one day I remember waking up and I could tell I was in a different time because I had a blindfold on. I was seeing through the blindfold, and my one of my younger children was in the bed with me. And I think she was maybe two at the time or three. And I remember thinking, okay, she wasn't in the bed when I got here, so I know I'm in a different time. And also the blindfold was evidence that I was in a different time. And I remember thinking, okay, so that means I'm supposed to do this now. And I remember thinking that. And so that day, I kind of like woke up again for real. And then that day, I said, you know what? When I do my lying down meditation, I'm going to bring my blindfold with me. And I'm just going to start practicing so that it will happen. So I bring my blindfold, I go to my bed, and my daughter gets into the bed. I said, oh, it's going to happen right now. And I said, oh my gosh. So I sit up, same exact center. And I said, oh my gosh, I got to practice this every day. And so the next few days, I couldn't replicate it. I was only seeing in the dark. And I remember thinking, I need to find out. And I tried Vibra Vision, who's here, Moss Lake. And it just didn't work out because I was like, I found out I was pregnant and it was all this weird stuff. I couldn't actually work with him. And he's only 20 minutes from me. We're like really good friends now. But it's so amazing how that worked out. I wanted to work with him so badly, and it just didn't happen in that way. But I found Vision Without Eyes, Freeman and Wendy Gallant in Toronto or in that area. And so I had a free call with him. And so I closed my eyes and he's kind of guiding me. And he's very new to doing this. He hadn't actually had a seminar or anything yet. He was new. And as I was on there, I immediately started seeing, but I was seeing in my head. And I was like, this is crazy. I've never actually tried to see in a visual way something. I was always using my senses, but I wasn't, and I got really good, but I never tried it in a visual way. And I just remember being shocked, and he was shocked. He was just like, oh my gosh, you need to come to our first seminar. And so I went, and I immediately opened, and they were shocked because this is new for them too. And then immediately, he asked me to start helping others. And so I went from opening really quickly to helping people and training it like instantly. And so it's only been about a year and a half. I've already trained like thousands. And so that was a big, it's like everything kind of matched up, like it was supposed to happen. But I remember one thing that I didn't do, and this is what happened at that seminar, is had me go outside. And I've always been practicing in complete darkness. I had never tried doing something in the light. And that's when it clicked. I said, this is a light sense. I said, that's why we need, in order for it to behave like eyesight, there needs to be light, because eyesight needs light. And it just all clicked. And then it made it so, it just all clicked. And then I was able to replicate it and get people to do it, whether they were sighted or blind. So it was awesome.
That's amazing. And it kind of makes sense that you're saying initially you could kind of see better in the dark, but then with more photons present, you're able to receive like more information even when your blindfold's on. That's really interesting. And it almost sounds as well, and I guess I'll ask you directly, like this is kind of self-taught, right? Like there's a certain point where Rob came in and was directing you, but up until that point, you've just kind of been following your intuition. Would that be right?
Exactly. I actually do train most of it from the stuff that I kind of built up over the years. And so I actually train a lot with the other senses, because there's multiple ways of seeing. So the way where we're seeing colors and seeing and being able to read, that's what I call the light sense. And that's kind of what I got. That's that epiphany I had. But other than that, I also kind of train what I call hyperphantasia, or what is called hyperphantasia. And that's the ability to see inside your head. And so with that, you can actually hold something in another room and you'll see it in your head. And then there's also prophantasia, where you're seeing it in front of you, even if it's not in the same room as you. And so these are some of the things I teach. And then I also the darkness. I also kind of teach seeing through things. So a transparency vision. So Ben Carson's actually pretty famous for that one. He's a neurosurgeon, and I've actually had neurosurgeons reach out and say, hey, I want to learn this because I want to be a better surgeon. So a lot of people do recognize that this is an actual phenomenon.
Yeah. Have those neurosurgeons offered to like study how this works for you? You know, like scan you as you're kind of doing it and see scientifically how this is happening?
I've not from them specifically, but I've had my brain scan. I've had my students' brain scan, and there's a definite difference. Like me, for example, when I'm blindfolded, like, well, let's say I'm reading without a blindfold, my brain tends to be in the gamma beta state. But if I'm blindfolded, the beta totally goes away and I'm high alpha, like high alpha. I'm doing the same exact thing. It feels the same. High alpha, and my gamma is still there. And my visual cortex is still lit up. And I have a blind student and he has no eyes at all. And depending on what he's doing, so if there's light involved and he's seeing it kind of right in front of him using the light sense, what I call it, his visual cortex is still lit up and his gamma is high, but also he's in delta theta usually. But if it is something where he's in another, where he's seeing from another room, then it's actually more of a delta theta and no visual cortex. It's weird. And so it changes depending on what we're doing. So there's different mechanisms at play. But the part with the visual cortex, though, so what I understand is that what we're doing is we're taking a lot of the sensory information and it's getting translated into visual cortex, and we're seeing an image that's just same as eyes. So a lot of people think we only see with our eyes, and I actually think we're really seeing with a lot of stuff, and it's really the visual cortex that's giving us the image, not the eyes. The eyes is just one way we're seeing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I forget the researcher's name, but there was someone who he was playing with the plasticity of our senses and making it so you could see through your ears or hear through taste, you know? And he showed that, you know, your brain adjusts, it's really flexible and it can pick this up. And he was describing scenes by going and, you know, seeing with his tongue.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, if you put, it sounds funny, but if you put a flashlight in your mouth, you can activate.
No way.
And so yeah, and it is the neuroplasticity. The brain is so, it's so malleable. And it's interesting when you know you're actually building the skill, you get kind of tired really quickly. And so I always say 10 minutes at a time, because you'll have fun and you're building, but all of a sudden you're like super drained, like you were studying for 3 hours or something.
That's interesting. Because like mediums have the same thing, right? And I'm thinking of it in terms of the mechanism that you're tapping into, that if it's similar in any way to, you know, what mediums do, what remote viewers do, they also get really tired really quickly, right? So do you think maybe it's the same thing, but you're just using it and it's a different tool?
I think so. The way I train it though, is I train it like it's a sense and it's like extra sensory. So it's like, let's say your sense of sound, you hear a song that you recognize, you know exactly what song it is. Like, and it's instant. You don't even have to think about it. You know it. And so what I train is that you're doing the same thing, but instantly you're also getting an image. So like you'll hear, if I'm scratching a red paper, you'll instantly see red in your mind. Okay. And it's that fast in that instant. And so the one difference between like a remote viewer and the other things is that usually they would have to meditate or they'll have to get into a nice space. But the way I train it is like it's just one of your senses. In fact, it's so ordinary that people tend to, they get excited when it first happens and then it's just like, this is so easy. I'm like, I don't even have to think about it. So that's kind of what it turns into.
It's funny that something so magical becomes really mundane, but mm-hmm. that's the truth of it, right? All this stuff is just nature we don't understand yet.
Yeah, it's stuff that we don't realize we can do because there was no need. And so what I do is I create a need and then the brain adjusts so that, and every time it's about getting you to actually do it in a visual way. Sure. We don't have to do it in a visual way, but that's just the way I kind of do it because, you know, if, especially if the person's blind, like we want them to have different ways to be able to see.
That's incredible. Like just on an accessibility basis as well, like that this stuff, think about all the people around the world who struggle with, you know, eyesight. And then they've just got to do this and they can finally, you know, see and
yeah, operate. What's interesting, it makes no sense. I mean, it does make sense actually. But what's interesting is whenever I do trainings, people's eyesight improves as well. Or it's more like their ability to perceive improves where they can get to 20/20 or beyond. A lot of people go beyond, but a lot of people end up losing their glasses. They like after a week, after a few days, and it'll be validated by an optometrist. We have people with like one eye that's blind, all of a sudden they can see 20/20, or someone that's colorblind, all of a sudden they can see. I actually had a recent person reach out and is like, okay, I can easily tell the colors apart now. How do I know what I'm seeing is the same thing you're seeing? And I was like, I don't even know if the next person next to me is seeing the same thing as I'm seeing. I'm like, we don't even know that. So just be happy you can see it.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting about adjusting the eye. I kind of want to give you my glasses and be free of them, you know? So let's talk about the actual process. So what does it look like? You've got all of this stuff. When I read about it and it was like, you put a blindfold on, I was like, well, maybe there are gaps. Maybe there are this, you know, trying to rationalize it. But it looks like you do more than just put a blindfold on. So what's the process for you?
Well, this is more of a progression part. So normally you do a blindfold what I'm doing really is getting you, it's called minimal light perception training. So we've actually studied, there's something called a lux meter you can put in your mask to see how much light is actually getting in. The light that gets in on average, if it's kind of secure and you're smiling and you're doing all this, the light that gets in is 0.002 lux, which is way below what the human eye needs to see. Human eye to see color, just to see a little bit of color needs 3 lux. And again, the mask is getting 0.002. So what we're doing is we're training you to have that tiny, tiny bit of information of light and being able to see color with it. Then that's the first part. It's just, well, the first part is just seeing light. At first, a lot of people just see darkness. So I get them used to seeing light. And then after that, we get them used to seeing wavelengths of light, which is color. And once they're strong enough to see color, then we start getting them to see shapes. Once they can see shapes, they can see more fine detail. And so so it gets to the point, like to be able to read comfortably, you need about 500 lux of light. It gets to a point where with 0.002 lux, you can actually read and you can see colors and you can see from across the room. And so what I do with these, this is more to help you progress even more. So I'll have people tape their eyes shut. And I like to just kind of, I put these pyro patches on, I put these on, I put this in front of the mask. And I'm doing a little bit at a time because a lot of it is mindset related. And so a lot of people want to just jump from as soon as they start seeing, thinking, oh, I want to just do this immediately to prove to myself I'm not somehow looking through a gap or something. And I say, no, get good at this right now, where you are right now. And then we will do this when you're good, you know? And so I have to keep reminding because a lot of people start off like that, like, oh, I'm not satisfied. I can see color. So I want to do it with that. I'm like, you're not even at that level yet. Let's just gradually, you'll get there. It doesn't take very long. It could take a day or two. So
that's fast. Mm-hmm. And do you find that maybe like when they go too fast into this, that it kind of knocks their confidence. And if they don't believe they can do it, it's worse.
Exactly. There's so much about mindset that's important. It's not even a skill you have to develop. It's more like, it's something you already have, and it's your perception that needs to change. So my main thing is helping people with their perception and letting them know they can do it. And then a little bit more of getting your sensitivity high, but it doesn't take very long. The brain adjusts really, really fast.
That's incredible. So I want to make sure we touch on the hill.
Okay.
So this is a space that in the telepathy tapes, you know, it's a communal psychic space, we'll say. Have you been there? What's your sense of it? Have your children kind of ventured there? And do you speak to them there?
So my daughter goes to the hill like all the time, like throughout the day, not even just at night. It's throughout the day. When we're in our hotel room, she goes on the balcony, goes to the hill. She's just at the hill all the time. For me, it's more of when I'm dreaming that I'll go, and she actually takes me there. And so at night, she'll just wait for me to go to sleep, and then she'll kind of do her pacing thing. And somehow, I don't know what she's doing, but she gets there. And I know I'm there because there's a slide or a water park or something like that. So that's the kind of the totem. And it's not just me. It's everybody that's around my daughter, and she tells them, okay, you're going to do the water park dream, you know? And so then they'll wake up there. And I've had, you know, usually with our classes, my daughter runs the telepathy portion. And usually with the classes, they'll start going to the hill, and a lot of them will have the same experience, and they'll call me and say, oh my gosh, I saw Lulu at the hill and this happened. And then people will have the same exact experience. And as far as what's there, I don't remember it very well, because when I go and I come back, people see me there all the time, and they see Dr. Diane there and my daughter, but I hardly remember, because when I wake up, I immediately have to go into mommy mode. But I do have some glimpses and memories of it. And my daughter describes it as this place you can go. She calls it an ethereal place where you can go and you can actually study. They have meetings there. She called it the library before, and now she actually calls it the Akashic Library.
Oh, interesting.
So I was like, oh, and there's, of course, there's always some kind of sliding going on, but I think that's because, you know, like there's hills or parks, but I think that's just showing us that we're there. I'm not sure. But I remember having this, you know, one day my daughter woke up, she was having a great dream, you know, and usually when she says that, she's very happy about something that happened at the hill. And then like a minute later, two of my students reached out the same exact time. I said, I just had a dream with Lulu, or they said I was at the hill with Lulu. And they both described what she was wearing, and they both described the same experience. At the same time, they said that she gave them a tablet, and they put their hands on the tablet. There was a double helix on it, and then this blue light went up their arms, and there was some kind of an upgrade. So,
wow.
And so my daughter will always say in our classes, she'll say, look, like, training in telepathy is better if it's telepathic, we're just opening the channels telepathically. There is, you know, we could do a lot verbally, but it's not as efficient. So she always asks them, like, can you please, if you're wanting to do it, give the teachers, she calls them the teachers, or her permission to train telepathically. And so that's when it starts happening for people, and I hear about it.
That's amazing. And I guess that makes sense. You know, if I want to learn to paint, I'm going to have an easier time with a paintbrush learning to paint than just talking about painting, right? So yeah, it's a different thing. So you've got a 4-day training event coming up called Senseless, where you're going to be with Chris Bledsoe and someone else. It's hosted by Ubiquity University in Utah. And people that are at Contact can get 10% off that with the code CITD_2026. Tell me about what people should expect at your training.
Yeah, so our trainings are, and Alex Stefan is the other person, and our trainings are pretty life-changing, because you go in and you see and experience things that you'd never thought were humanly possible. So you have an entire 4 days of just not back-to-back, I didn't know this was possible, I experienced it. I didn't know this was possible, I experienced it. It's back-to-back like that. So you first see people doing otherworldly things. You're seeing it just like a child, and you're seeing something. And then you experience it. Sure. And then after your experience, we might talk about what is happening. Okay. But you start to learn that it is mindset. It is the way you perceive the world. And you start to realize this world is not what you thought. So so you have these experiences. And then you just meet a different person, knowing that your intention is really, really a big deal. But yeah, Chris and his magical self is there, and he'll be doing sky watches. But some of the things people do is we'll do things that are mind over matter. Like for example, things that seem impossible, like we can take a bunch of metal and make it magnetized. And it doesn't even have to be metal, it can be non-metal. We can just say it's magnetized and then you show that it's magnetized. That's one example. Or we'll stick items and defy physics. I say defy physics because it's just our understanding of physics, which is not accurate. But we'll just tell something to stay on the wall, we'll say. Okay. Like stuff like that. And so, and I always say, it's like you're having novel experiences again. So a lot of adults don't have novel experiences. It's just the same thing every single day and what they already understand. But when you have novel experiences, it's like you're a kid again and time just lasts forever. So those 4 days feel like 4 months because you're just doing back-to-back things that make your eyes pop out.
That sounds incredible. And I love that you're talking about that kind of child mindset because I think it's important, right? Like when children think they're tigers, they're not thinking, I'm playing as a tiger. They're thinking, I'm a tiger, and they're running around with their friends. You know, the visualization is totally different. But that brings me, you mentioned human potential a lot throughout this conversation. And so I want to just, you know, the title of our show is always my last question. So I just want to ask you, what do you think it means to be human?
I always say that we are incredibly magical beings living in a magical world, and we were told it doesn't exist. And we told magic didn't exist. When I was a kid, my dad said something so profound and he did not mean to, but it stuck with me. I was 3 years old and I was watching The Wizard of Oz. And I remember seeing the Cowardly Lion, you know, crying that he was in the forest. And my dad said, he's actually really strong, but he just doesn't know it. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, she's right. He's a lion. He's the only thing to be afraid of is him. And I said, and I'm thinking of this in kid thoughts, but it just stood with me for life. And I said, oh my gosh. And I'm like, I wonder how many times we do that where we have this weird experience because we think something that's false. You know, like, for example, thinking that only our eyes are picking up the information for us to see. But I remember it just stood with me for life. And it still stands with me for life. And I'm like, all that lion needed was to change his perspective. And it would have a totally different experience. Yeah. Our magical beings. And we have so much ability. It's insane how much we can do. And I've seen it over and over again. It's incredible what we can do.
And I think your journey is a testament to that. You know, from just mom to magical person at contact. Yeah, thank you so much for this conversation. It's fascinating. And I really want to come on this now.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Spotify or on your chosen platform. If you could like, share, or subscribe, that would be very much appreciated. It helps us find our tribe. If you'd like to support the show and get access to a 1-hour live chat each month and early ad-free access, you can find us at Patreon. Just follow the link in the show notes or at our website, tobehumanshow.com. And feel free to reach out via the contact page or email at hello@tobehumanshow.com. As always, remember to be curious. The universe is bigger than we know.
What It Means to Be Human is a Double Barrel production. This week's episode was produced by Roz Mugford and Dan Zetterstrom. Sound post-production by Parker Mosley with technical support from Dale Mugford. Our theme music is by Thunderbird.